Maximum Health with your host, Dr. Ken Gray. Dr. Gray obtained his master's in both acupuncture and oriental medicine from the Atlantic Institute of Oriental Medicine. Dr. Gray enjoys both being a physician as well as being an educator. His unique approach to holistic healing has taken him abroad to lecture in Germany and treat sports professionals in Hawaii and France. He is co-author of several books on food therapy. His office is in Jupiter, Florida, where he has practiced for over a decade and where he resides. Now it's time for Maximum Health with Dr. Ken Gray.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. War is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see, sister. Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
Welcome back, everyone. This is Maximum Health Radio, Quality Living, with yours truly, Dr. Ken Gray, holistic physician. Thank you for joining us every Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard on NPR's 88.9 FM, WQCS. And for any past shows, there's always prx.org. The public radio exchange. It's free and it's wonderful. And Maximum Health aims to bring you a new guest every week, and authorities in all facets of health and wellness, well-being. And I love it that we're sort of, through our guests and their authorities and their associations, reframing the way that we as the public think about health. It's so many aspects to health, and we need to continue to expand our way of viewing wellness. And today we, in that effort, have a wonderful and very influential individual, Dr. Gary Slutkin from Cure Violence, an organization that began in 2000. And you might think, well, how does that have to do with health and well-being? Well, you know, violence, as Dr. Gary Slutkin will share with us today, has a lot more to do with a disease than it has to do with this sort of this idea that it's just looming out there and it's something that just happens. There's a pattern, right, Dr. Slutkin?
Yeah, you started us off very well. Yeah, we're aware of violence as a health issue primarily, and that doesn't just mean for the people who have been had violence done to them, which of course is the case, since they may need to be in the hospital or may even die from it, but also that the people who are perpetuating violence, that they themselves have a health problem. This is kind of the new science around violence, is that they have acquired a set of behaviors in a predictable way as a result of their exposure to violence, in a very similar way to people pick up, in a way, the flu or colds or tuberculosis or whatever as a result of exposure to it. And that is the predictable nature. And we've also learned that we can treat it as a health problem and get really substantially different results than we've been getting.
Hmm. You know, I just want to take our audience back a little bit, because the founding of Cure Violence by you, it's founded by the University of Illinois.
Right. We're situated at the University of Illinois at Chicago.
Right. Now, the whole world knows about Chicago. Chirac, these terms, it's a pretty violent place, as far as the news will tell us. Obviously, there's aspects of it that are not, but there's sections of it that are known for its violence. Did that have something to do with this foundation, the founding of Cure Violence, sort of?
Well, it's kind of yes and no, or maybe no and yes. I mean, so I come from, I'm a physician, I'm an infectious disease doctor. I worked overseas for 10 years, over 10 years, on epidemics like tuberculosis and cholera, and I worked with the World Health Organization's Global Program on AIDS. So I came back to Chicago principally because my parents, who were then elderly, were and subsequently passed, were here, and to be with them when I was coming home. But yes, Chicago was and remains a, in a way, an important laboratory for trying new innovative methods for this problem.
When you started in 2000, this must have seemed pretty foreign to most of your colleagues and people that you were associated with through epidemiology, correct?
Well, it's curious because it's again a yes and no. So it's like, which colleagues? So when you're talking to people who are in the U.S. or people who are in government in the U.S. or in the public, they're used to seeing violence in a particular way, and it being approached in a particular way, which you're all familiar with. But you know, in our, like, we, when we first tried this, the outreach interruption health worker approach, in 2000, we got a 67% drop in killings, shootings and killings in the worst police district in the country, which was in Chicago. And then we repeated it four more times and got an average of 45% drop and very, very fast reductions, because outreach workers and interrupters from the community are well, perfectly trained, know how to change behaviors, and shootings stop. So when I went back to World Health and presented this, you know, this is how we're reducing violence, and their response was, of course, how else would you do it? And
that's
so
awesome.
And because their view, which was kind of what my training was, is that, you know, behaviors are, they're formed in certain ways, copying the behaviors of others and according to the expectations of others, and you change behaviors by health workers, and that's what we're done, was done in Ebola, and that's what we did with cholera, and that's what, you know, we do in epidemic management all the time. So from their point of view, it's like, how else would you reduce an epidemic problem by usual epidemic health worker outreach methods?
Can you give me some insight into the way that program worked when you started it with the health workers?
Well, in the first community, which was West Garfield Park, we hired 8 people. And we had mapped out, this is the way it's done now, I mean, just to fast forward and then come back, you know, our Cure Violence is working now in 25 cities in the U.S., has had multiple independent evaluations, gets 40 to 70% drops in killings, is funded by the World Bank, Inter-American Development Bank, and the Justice Department, and the CDC, and is working throughout Latin America, and even now doing training in the Middle East, including on the West Bank. So this is a very well-established approach now. It's a very well-established and well-recognized non-governmental organization with a rating of being the 12th best NGO in the world. So this is like very well established practice now. But so the way that we did it, which is the way that it's done, whether it's Honduras or New York City or El Salvador or Kansas City or the places in Chicago where it's still working, you know, and Chicago really has, there was a reduction in funding, which is part of the reason why things have gone off the hook here. But the way that it started is we hired 8 people based on mapping the community and say, okay, there's 3 or 4 of these groups and 2 or 3 cliques, and we need to reach them all. And we hired people who had the access to those groups and those people who we figured out were most likely to do shootings, just shortcutting here a little bit. And then they got a lot of training in how to cool people down and to buy time, and then to, over hours, stay with them, and over days, reframe the situation so that they would feel good enough about themselves and the situation to not do the shooting that they were thinking of or planning. And if there had been a shooting, you know, these workers would, through their understanding of what was going on, reach out to who might be considering retaliating. You know, so one violent event leading to another event, leading to another event, you know, like any contagious process. And so then they're able to talk with those people and cool them down. And they become very, very highly trained and highly skilled at preventing events. And there's about 4 or 5 scenarios that events happen in that we can break them down. You know, there's the girlfriend issue, there's the insult issue, there's the owes me money. You know, there's a number of these types of things. And then there's, of course, retaliation. Hmm. So it's and these workers are very highly supervised and supported, and they work in teams. And they this is very similar to the way Ebola was managed. And until it was transformed into being managed that way, mm-hmm. It was out of control. You know, we had workers who went into the homes and the places where it was at the highest incidence of spread, and you know, got the helped the people to shift their behaviors in those instances. So it wasn't shooting a behavior; it was burial behavior or management of care people behavior, but also, you know, very deeply embedded behaviors that people had not rethought or known how to change.
There's something you said to a moment ago that is still perplexing me. So this system, which has worked for numerous deadly diseases and then began to work recognizably so for violence in some of the most violent places in our country, the funding was cut.
Yeah, well, the funding was cut in Chicago, not because of it. It was cut. People may know, the funding for the cure violence adaptation in Chicago, which is called CSPAR, is part of the state of Illinois' budget. There's been no state of Illinois' budget for, and it's going to be 3 years. So in March of 2015, the state announced that it was out of money. Yeah. So the cure violence work in Chicago went from 14 communities to one.
Right. Yeah.
And that was the third time that there's a lot of state difficulties in this state that don't have anything to do with cure violence. And cure violence isn't the only thing that was cut. I mean, there's so many other important services that were
education.
Cut. Oh yeah. So the relationship between cure violence specifically and that, you know, it's there's a 20-page report on this, which is on the cure violence website, which shows that in fact the one neighborhood where there was a maintenance of activity, the violence continued to go down. And so there's multiple results about this. I mean, it's been shown that retaliations can be dropped 100%. If five communities, they've shown 100% drop in retaliations. Baltimore's work, which is called Safe Streets, was evaluated by Johns Hopkins University, funded by the CDC. There was 35 to 55% drops in shootings and killings, and also showing that people's ideas and norms had changed. There's been evaluations in New York and New Orleans, and now a few in Latin America are getting 60% drops in the Caribbean, 80 or 90% in Honduras. This is all on CureVance's website, the results, the evaluations, and so on. You know, but to, the way that the show, you started the show so well is, you know, the way of looking at the problem and the way of looking at the issue, it hasn't really taken off so much that this is a health issue. It's not the way it's conveyed in the press. It's still perceived in a different way. And this different way is the way that we originally saw AIDS, mm-hmm. you know, very moralistically. Still are partially stuck.
I can see that because, you know, growing up in that era when AIDS happened, it was one of those things that was passed off as it's their fault or it's them. It's always them. And the same with violence. It's almost like you have this bubble of it if you're not living in it, and it's always them, but you don't see it as this, you know, infectious disease until it filters over into your community or your, you know,
that's
general
exactly
demographic.
Right.
Yeah.
But we meaning we in the...
The global we.
Globally in the public. This is just the way we are. It's not like we're dumb or yes, we're biased, and yes, we're not in the future yet. Yeah. But we are in the future with respect to problems like leprosy and plague and smallpox, and many of these things were around us. We never thought we'd get rid of them, and we saw these people as having, it was them, and it was a moral issue, and we didn't understand what was going on scientifically.
Right.
And so we condemn these people, and we're still in this realm, even with substance abuse and drug addiction.
Yeah, it's now just starting to change because, again, it's filtering into other demographics and
there you go.
People,
it's
and then it becomes a problem. But it was always a problem.
But we have an opportunity here, because not only is the science showing this as a contagious health issue, which the Institute of Medicine wrote a report on, and which there's now been hundreds of studies about violence as a contagious issue. That, by the way, includes violence in the family and even war. So this is all.
Yeah, this is something I really wanted to get to as well, because that's the question looming in my mind, is the broader scope of we, the community at large, the global picture here that is still needing quite a bit of cultivation of change.
Well, there's a path out. I talk about a little bit of this in the TED Talk that I did years ago, but it's that there are these two major problems that have affected humans and caused hundreds of millions of deaths. There's these infectious diseases, which have largely gone into the past, and then there's this infectious disease of violence, which hasn't yet been recategorized yet. But when you apply strong public health methods, which are some of the most powerful methods ever, but no one knows what they are, we can see, there are communities now in Baltimore and New York City that have, with this method, that were very seriously affected, violent communities that have gone a year to 2 years to zero. And, this is what you do when you're doing epidemic control. You take something to zero. That's what you do with Ebola or cholera. You try to get rid of it. You get rid of it. You don't get it down 40 or 70%. So there's a way out now. And, this is what's so important about this, your show, yeah, and about radio and the media, because this is about it. Now it's time for us to re-educate ourselves and say, wait a second, I re-understand this. And even though it's being shown this way on television, I've been informed this is basically a contagious health issue, and we can do outreach and interruption and drop these numbers and rates a lot.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see that happen, and I think, again, we're not only speaking to the people affected directly, but the people that maybe have turned an eye elsewhere, that, there are families out there where there's, I think violence not only is external, where we think of it as something happening to other people, but it's violence that turns on oneself. A lot of the times that can manifest on other people as well. So if a person is violent to oneself, patterns develop, and this disease affects, whether it's suicide, and all of these things that we're seeing more of, these suicidal situations where people go, and obviously there's violence done to others and then turned on oneself. That's been brewing, and that's a disease. And that's happening across the board in many communities over the country. So I'm pleading with obviously listeners to start to really see the importance of your organization, Cure Violence, and this view of looking at this health concern and disease that's increasing, because if we don't, and we keep spending money on, say, okay, let's build more jails, let's invest in that, let's let's invest in ways in more pharmaceuticals to sort of skew the way people feel and sense, instead of really dealing it from a social, environmental, educational, and disease, health based technique, then I think we're just going to continue seeing the same escalation.
Yeah, there's many corners to what you've said, and it was said so well. So those, and so many of us in America have been traumatized during just the way that child rearing is done here. It's very punitive, and not in every home, of course. I don't think I did it, myself, or it happened to me, but in fact, it's, we are a little more punitive than supportive as compared to some other societies. And that is causes emotional damage, and that can turn in and cause a lot of unhappiness and drug addiction and suicides. And suicide is contagious, it clusters. You can even see how mass shootings, some of what is called quote-unquote extremism, I don't like that term, but that recruitment is following and copying and is contagious and is susceptible to interruption and outreach. And some of those events are actually suicides.
Right.
Some of them are called suicides.
They're called terrorists or whatever, but they're suicides.
But they're not. They're combinations of violence out and violence in is the result. And so this is all about the requirement, as you pointed out, to really get into very powerful and effective healing methodologies for individuals and for groups and within community. And that's what, and we're not, we in Cure Violence are not alone, we're not working alone. There's 40 cities now and 40 national health organizations that are working on violence as a health issue. There's a bill that was introduced to put $1 billion in available from the federal government into allowing the health sector to step up a little bit. Hospitals are now working to do more outreach when someone is shot to prevent him from coming back, and also from the retaliations. And, you know, just community-based solutions that the health sector can train and support in. There are a lot of these solutions that are used in many other countries that have lesser problems of this nature. So this is the moment. And with, and not only is there what's called justice reform, but there's that sector has taken up too much of the air. And there's this big gap of the health sector and the community's work that facilitates real healing, real outreach, real support, real education on trauma and self-care and care of others, that is now much more scientifically grounded. And, you know, as we've shown, you can drop the numbers and rates of shootings and killings, like, exceptionally, enormously, with life-saving and cost-saving that are really being underutilized.
Old pirates, yes, they rob I, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs.
What you're doing with Cure Violence is phenomenal. I just want to reiterate to those just tuning in or have missed portions of the show. We're speaking with Dr. Gary Slutkin, who founded Cure Violence in 2000. The focus is a health approach to violence prevention. The method is detecting and interrupting conflicts, identifying and treating high-risk individuals, and changing social norms. And I think you're doing this on a global scale, Dr. Slutkin, and I thank you for your amazing work. I'm curious here because, you know, I've heard different stories, seen different things as a physician. You know, when we talk about violence as a health concern, and I look at cancer, right? You know, as a society, I still think, although we have effective methods of sort of treating it, I can't say there are cures because there's so many instances when it does come back. But I do look at, you know, from the thing that intrigues me is the Eastern perspective and view of cancer is this thing that starts way beyond before it becomes a mass or tumor or malignant. It starts with a stagnation of qi and blood flow, which is your nutrients, your life force. And then, you know, then when you have that stagnation, then mass follows. And then when that mass is encapsulated, not receiving proper nourishment, then those cells become, you know, just corrupt and almost turn against itself. And that becomes cancer. It's like this internal death. And so what do? We throw poison at it and try to, you know, kill everything. And hopefully that part will die faster than the rest of the host. I'd like to look at us as this host, this planet. And I think what you're doing is you're saying that instead of killing everything around that problem, maybe try to just deal with that problem. And I think it's a real viable thing to consider. And I think that people need to support this view and what you're doing more. How does this possibly apply to sort of aspects of our police force? And I have to say that because there's a lot of attention in the violence within the sense of the, you know, the police, the people upholding our law also has these issues. There's this disease within the military and the police force that's not being dealt with as well. How do we deal with that?
Well, you're right. So police and military are in highly stressful situations themselves. The job is not easy. in fact, their life expectancies are shorter. And it isn't because of being shot. It's because of the stresses of that turn into early states of heart disease.
Right. Use of energy to stay up for hours, energy drinks and caffeine to stay up for hours, probably lack of management of stress through exercise and yoga, lifestyle at home probably being stressful and managing that other ways through medication, possibly.
Well, they're being asked to, because the overall culture in the U.S. is really not a supportive enough culture, it's more of this punitive, they've been asked to deal with things that make no sense for and are predictably harmful to conditions such as, mental health. The police are having to pick up people who have mental health disorders. How additionally traumatizing for people who have drug addiction. Mental health is obviously a health issue.
Yes.
Drug addiction, obviously a health issue. Now we know that violent behavior itself is primarily a health issue. And so all of these problems, they're being asked to come in and do something about. They themselves, the former Superintendent Brown of Dallas, was very, very vocal about this, as are many. They're being asked, so what is to be dealing with these problems, including the violence in the community? Well, it's the community itself is supported, trained by the health sector that can reduce many of these issues. And so the police role should be less. They should be having less of these interactions, less of these toxic interactions, and there should be more of these health workers, whether they're interrupters or outreach workers or trauma specialists or mental health people. But we've also over-professionalized some of these services, whereas they're in other countries, they're much more paraprofessionally accepted. So there's a giant missing piece in the country, in most cities, which is the community doing it itself, but guided by the health sector into trauma reduction, stress reduction, violence interruption, outreach, family support, early support of young children, all of these things. We've gone down the wrong path, and it's time for this health community sector to step in. And of course, there needs to be the resources for this.
Yes.
We're losing in every way for not doing this.
Okay. Well, learn more about Cure Violence. Watch Dr. Gary Slutkin's TED Talk on cureviolence.org. Support Cure Violence via cureviolence.org. And let's cure violence. This has been another Maximum Health Quality Living with yours truly, Dr. Ken Gray. Email me, drken@drkengray.com, if you have any questions or concerns. Thank you, Dr. Gary Slutkin, for your life's work.
Thank you very much, Ken. Little darling, it's been a long, long, lonely winter.